Welcome to Sisters of Sound. I'm your host, Morgan Shepherd, from the Tattoo Sound and Music Studios in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's really quite cold out now. One of my Christmas trees is already decorated. There's going to be two. One real one, one fake one. The fake one is hot pink. And yes, it's decorated. With the cold weather brings kind of a forced time period for us Canadians to buckle down and relax. And for some, this could be getting cozy by the fire with a book. But in today's world, you don't really need to read anymore to experience a book. You can listen to one instead, like you're listening to me now. Clearly, you like podcasts. So do you like audiobooks? On episode 13, we are diving into audiobooks with Anne Jansen, Director of Audiobook Production for Penguin Random House Canada. Anne spent a long time working for the CBC as the senior producer for Canada Reads, their ever-popular annual Battle of the Books. She now works in publishing on the audio side and is here to tell us how it all works. Audiobooks and podcasts are no doubt exploding, and it's an industry we wanted to learn more about, and we're here to do just that. Thanks, Anne, for coming in.
It's great to be here.
I know you're very busy.
It is a busy time, but then they always seem to be busy times.
True enough. We want to just jump right into it, and we're going to talk about your whole career, your time at CBC, what you're doing now with audiobooks in Penguin Random House Canada. But what age were you when you became interested in storytelling?
I don't think I can remember a time when I wasn't, you know, not only interested, but obsessed with it. So I remember being a reader young, I don't know exactly when, but the minute I realized that people could, you know, read to themselves and create whole worlds in their brain and have lots and lots of things happen from every day, you know, every day thereon, there seemed to be a book in my hand for sure in the early days. So way, way back in the midst of prehistory is when I started getting interested in storytelling.
I mean, that makes sense because most people are brought into the world right away having stories told to them.
Yeah, whether it's stories told or you're catching up with, you know, or you're kind of listening around the corner or something's happening or the radio's playing or whatever it is. From the moment we're born, I think we kind of swim in stories. And so I just don't remember a time when I wasn't busy swimming.
When did you realize that this is something that you could do professionally?
It did take a while. Like, I remember loving radio and loving music and loving sound. And I remember being a teenager, and I grew up on a farm near Ottawa, and we were far from a library, and we didn't have a lot of books. My parents were Dutch immigrants and kind of busy in the farm. So the radio played, so we had a lot of things come to us from the radio, and then the combination of radio and books. And I remember a pivotal moment for me was being a teenager and sitting in the living room and listening to the CBC, and Gwendolyn McEwen read some of her poems, and she's an amazing poet. And I walk by her house in the annex and see the little sign saying that she lived there. And I remember just kind of being struck by how remarkable it was to have a person read a poem, tell you something, their personal imaginative space just comes to you across the airwaves. So that's when I think I fell in love with radio. I didn't think about working in radio for quite a while. I was going to be an academic. I was going to go and, you know, teach young minds how to think about theater.
So that's what you took in post-secondary?
Yes, I studied, well, English and journalism. Then I decided journalism was way too cut and thrust for the likes of me. So I did go into studying theater and mostly stage stuff. I started writing reviews of theater. I started doing a little bit of audio reviewing theater, not a ton. And it was that moment you sort of realize I'm on radio live and everybody can hear me. And then you kind of breathe deeply and you start over or whatever. But yeah, I wanted to be at first a librarian, and then I wanted to be an academic. And then I sort of stumbled into radio drama in particular. So I was editing magazines and writing things and being a freelance editor and putting it all together the way people do when they're younger and sometimes forever. And I assigned somebody a story for a magazine about CBC, and it was a story about radio drama because I was very curious about theater of the mind and audio and all that.
I was going to say, really, it does all tie in.
It kind of came together. I didn't see my path forward, although, you know, at one point I thought, the CBC, and then I kind of got distracted for a while. But from that, I got to know the person who wrote the article was a script editor for CBC Radio Dramas, and she told me about a gig that was opening up because she was going to work at, I forget which show, but eventually she started working at Writers and Company with Eleanor Wachtel. She created that show. So Sandra told me all about this gig, and I applied for it. I was part-time. I was still thinking about being an academic, but I was starting to work with plays and think about sound and think about how voices were going to work in terms of telling a story, and I just got hooked. And then I was offered I guess, a full-time job creating a book show with another colleague called Heather Brown, and we created a show called Between the Covers. And it was a serialized 15-minute episodic treatment of books, abridged books that were read by actors on CBC. It's kind of like the equivalent of a book at bedtime on the BBC. Yep. And so that was it. I was off to the races and I never really looked back. So it was audio from then on in.
Wow. So once you got into CBC, clearly you were crushing it, because then you went on to Canada Reads.
Well, it took a few years to get there, mm-hmm. but Canada Reads didn't exist when I'd started. Between the Covers, gosh, it was probably a good decade. And I think the show went for about 17 years. During that time, I was reading anything and everything. It was all fiction, but all Canadian short stories,
wow.
novels. My colleague and I read as much as we could. We got into studio with actors, professional actors. It was dreamy. And then I started directing radio plays. So that was a really fun thing. Kind of I got in just before the door closed with a very firm sound effect and CBC got out of radio dramas. But I did get to do that for a while. And then came Canada Reads, which put together a different kind of take on books and audio. At first it was just on radio. And by the time I left, it's, you know, live shows, not pre-taped radio shows, but live, obviously radio shows, but also on TV and the internet and everywhere. So it really grew a lot. I mean, it was founded by a woman named Talene Vartanian, I got to take it on after she moved on to other programs, but it was a pretty great ride.
Wow, yeah, and it's an iconic show. And what was the time like working on that show? You were the producer for that show for 10 years?
Well, yeah, I was producer and then senior producer. So, and then in there, we also launched and developed CBC Books, the online portal for all things bookish on CBC. So that was a pretty great thing to go into the digital realm. And it kind of started because Canada Reads was going strong digitally. And then we started adding all kinds of other things. We were commissioning some fiction. We were working with the Literary Awards, getting original content. We were doing poetry. Oh, that was all very dreamy. But then Canada Reads was pretty much the juggernaut. It kind of drove a lot of things. And it was exciting because it really did grow and develop. I mean, it wasn't just me. There were other people. David Carroll helped to redesign it and make it into this live program, which was more a game show than it had been. It had been more of a debating show with game show elements. It was really exciting. And it's nice to be part of something successful that gets people to read.
Yeah.
So, I might be at the dentist's office and suddenly I'm noticing that two people have books that were on last year's Canada Reads, which is a very nice thing when you have to face the dentist in a few minutes. It's nice to have a bit of a lift there. But, there were a lot of events that people did in libraries and in community centers and in different places across the whole country. So the ability to send someone like Tracy Lindberg, the author of Birdie, you know, to a Northern Ontario community, to also talk to Richard Wagamese, to, you know, all these different people who are traveling the country and going out and meeting people, and then just books selling. I mean, that was great. So we were doing great programming as public broadcasters, but it was also getting people to pay attention to Canadian stories and talk about them and in a really fun way, and sometimes in a very intense way.
Wow. If you could... okay, we'll get back to your book recommendations later.
Oh, that's a hard one.
I know, but I feel like you are just like a walking library, but not just of, you know, a whole bunch of books, but the best ones
Maybe.
In Canada.
Well, there was, you know, or the best ones that, you know, that certain people fell in love with, because with Canada Reads in particular, I was matchmaking, looking at what kind of a reader a person was and finding books that would sort of suit them and that they could become passionate about. And eventually, most of them started talking about my book as if they'd actually written it, but it wasn't theirs in the sense that they had embraced it so totally, watching connections happen between the panelists who choose the book and, and also the brutality, not the brutality, maybe the intensity of having a book, you know, taken off the bookshelf gently. And then a book does win because people's minds are very focused on, you know, competition. But every book was a winner, of course, as we said. Anyway, so it was pretty fun. And, I think with any prize or with any kind of contest, it's so much up to what the individual taste is and what they, if they're arguing their corners. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm a library of good books, or sometimes great books, but the card catalog is very muddy and sort of strewn on the ground. So I don't know how organized I am about the thoughts about the books.
That makes sense. So you're no longer with the CBC.
I know.
Now you're at Penguin Random House Canada. What are you doing there?
So I am working on an audiobooks program, which is a very ambitious one in Canada. Penguin Random House Canada launched it I think I started in June 2017. At the time, there were two of us plus Marion Garner, who's the head of audiobooks, paperbacks, and the deputy publisher. Now there are four of us plus an in-house studio, and we're almost hitting our 100th audiobook.
Wow.
So we are creating audiobooks in Canada of many of, most of the narrative titles that we do. So if a book, nonfiction or fiction, lends itself to the voice, whether it's a memoir or novel, we are going to go into studio and lay it down with voice.
What is the workflow like for an audiobook? So here, we work mostly in commercial work. So a project for us could be a 30-second duration, right, and it could still take a whole week. So for a book, that's 300 pages.
It does take longer. We probably don't add as much sound at this mm-hmm. point. We aren't finessing. We probably aren't running our pieces by as many layers of approvals as you might have to. Just put it gently. But yeah, it's true. So if you had a 300-page book or it turns into a 10-hour audio book, if you're lucky, it's a 3 or a 2-to-1 ratio in studio. So that means okay. you've got... So we roll record. We don't punch in with our recordings, which means that we have a lot, not a lot of takes, but we do end up going back and making sure things are finessed as opposed to punching in to redo it. Mm-hmm. It will be edited afterwards. So it can be a lengthy process in studio and then afterwards to make sure that everything goes together swimmingly and sounds beautiful and seamless. So we will, right now we're talking about books that are going to come out in the summer of 2019. But in a couple of weeks, we're going to start talking about books that are coming out in the fall of 2019. Early in the new year, we'll start talking about the books that are coming after that. So we sort of do it season by season. Yep. We find out whether or not it's going to be author read or will it be read by an actor. We start, you know, doing auditions. We start thinking about it. We have to figure out, obviously, the best voice, the best treatment. And then when we're in studio, it can take, you know, an average book, a 10-hour book might take about a week in studio.
Okay.
5 to 7 days of recording if you're recording pretty full days. And then the editing takes a couple weeks and then we vet it twice. The editor vets it and then another person listens to the entire audiobook edited against the original text because we are aiming for word perfect.
Wow.
Unless there's an author who kind of has a storytelling flow, then yeah. we have a little bit more flexibility. But we want the thing that people are listening to be the same as hearing as it would be if they were looking at it on the page.
So the person who is editing the audiobook for sound, not technically editing it, is that person on your editing team or part of the audiobooks team?
So the audiobooks team consists of 4 people now, and it involves a scheduling person who is also an associate producer. Scheduling manager, because that person is not only working with our in-house studio, but with private studios across this great nation of ours, when we have authors in different places or an actor in a particular city and so on. So we have an administrative person who deals with all manner of things from taking photographs to, you know, making sure that people get paid to making sure the script's in the right place. And we have an audio engineer who does all of our in-house recording with a little bit of backup when he needs to actually breathe mm-hmm. and take a holiday. But all of our post work is done out of house.
Okay.
So we send it to freelance editors or post-production houses,
yep.
and that's where the editing takes place. We have systems of tracking in terms of errors that are caught or sounds. They might put in clips that I would listen to as a producer. So we have a variety of different
gotcha.
Ways afterwards. So in-house, we have 4 people full-time, hooray, and who knows about the future.
What's the difference between a voice actor who's voicing an audiobook or might be, you know, that might be their specialty and other mediums?
Well, it has some similarities with a number of different things. It might be, you know, a narration or voiceover in a film would be similar in some ways, or a narration for a documentary. It's somehow, you know, oriented towards people who also do animation. Sometimes their voices are right because they're used to doing different characters. It's sometimes theater people have a lot of expertise at dealing with large chunks of text, mm-hmm. especially with classical theater, but even with contemporary. Film actors, it's a little bit different from audiobook. Audiobook is like the marathon.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have a commercial, it's the sprint. And it's, you know, you got to give it your all in that sprint. A marathon, you have to pace yourself and realize that there's going to be a hill and a valley. You want to make sure this significant part is really crisp and clear. You have to breathe a little bit. You know, obviously we're aiming for a great sound throughout and for things to be pristine. And they're, I mean, we don't want noises that are extraneous that are going to make people think that they're going to lose that illusion of you know, the imagined world. But you really, you know, if you're reading 300 pages, you got to break it down and you got to have staying power for sure. So
yeah.
I think that's one of the differences. And I know that one of the first actors I worked with, oh, and I'm going to forget his name at the moment, but he said, "This is great. I get to create the world and I can be everybody in it." So it's having a lot of different voices at your disposal if it's that kind of book, if it's not just storytelling, if it's a more character-oriented, mm-hmm. or if there's a lot of action, you have to kind of lean in and invest. Sometimes it's making sure there's enough room for the listener. Well, there's always enough room for the listener to create the world with you, but how much you're giving them in terms of voices and accents and intensity and, you know, poetic language or whatever. So it's... different actors come at it from different directions, but the more an actor has read audiobooks, the better. Some of our strongest people have actually been volunteering with CNIB, which is, they have a lot of recording.
Yeah.
They do an amazing, amazing job. But we've also had people who've worked in radio drama a lot in the past. And the part I haven't mentioned is that we have freelance directors. So there's an engineer in studio, obviously the narrator, and a director. And the director is, sometimes it's me, if I'm lucky, I get to go into studio. And also we work with freelance directors who've worked in radio or in theater or some combination. They're playwrights, they're actors, they have a sense of what audio is. So it takes a little village to raise an audiobook.
Very cool. It's interesting you mentioned the CNIB. So my experience with audiobooks is through the CNIB because my mother is legally blind.
I think I saw something on one of your social posts lately about
that,
right? Yes.
Yeah. So when she lost her vision and she loved reading, audiobooks were like a savior.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing I'm curious about when you mentioned an actor having to voice multiple different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Is it common, or do you think in the future there will be different voices throughout one audiobook production?
Well, there already are.
There
are a couple of our audiobooks. I just did a book by a writer named, directed a book by a writer named Anita Rao Badami, and it was told from the point of view of four different characters, including two young characters. One was very young, and then two older women characters, and it was just a great kind of, you know, cutting between the different voices and between the different points of view. First Snow, Last Light by Wayne Johnson said in Newfoundland had two major voices and then two smaller roles, one of which Gordon Pinsent read, which was pretty great.
Cool.
And the other two were David Ferry and Mary Lewis, both great performers. And then there was a young performer from Newfoundland. So there are books that we're doing already that have a number of voices.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big thing, the thing that is very interesting is if a book gets actually dramatized. So if it's actually written in a way where you have a whole bunch of characters, but there's also a lot of, you know, connective tissue with a third person narrator describing how they speak, how they move, what they do, that's different from one person speaking and the first person narrator. So I don't know that, you know, when we'll end up in that. I know it's happened and will happen again. I've worked on a lot of dramatizations at the CBC, and it's like taking a book and making it into a film. Something changes, something gets lost, something gets gained. So I think sometimes, I think that, you know, people can really, really enjoy that. But I think with the single voice audiobook or with a few different narrators, but all one at a time, there's a pleasure just in that being that one voice that tells you a story, whether it's describing characters doing things or whether it's a character telling the story. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. It takes a lot of time and money to turn a book into a play for the stage, for film, all those sorts of things. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if it goes more that way. I know that Margaret Atwood's Angel Catbird was dramatized recently, and, you know, somebody took out all the connective tissue and the words that weren't the dialogue and, you know, added sound and made it into an audio experience.
Interesting. I feel like there could be much debate about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's taking away from the simplicity of using your own imagination, like if you were reading a book.
I think it's really, like, I describe audiobooks when I'm talking to the authors who might not know audiobooks that well. I usually describe it as, you know, different audiobooks have a different kind of palette. So one will be a line drawing, you know, a beautiful black and white line drawing. And there's a lot of room for the listener to inhabit. It's more storytelling. One will be an action thing where you're going to use really bright colors and it's going to be pop art or something like that. So it really varies. So it's what I find the most fascinating about audiobooks for me as a director and as a producer, finding the voices and casting, is just how much space are you leaving? How animated is it going to be? How much do people lean into voices? How much does all that happen? So I think some people are going to prefer full-on dramas, and that's happening. We've been seeing a real resurgence in audio drama and audio fiction. And some people just want, tell me a story. And some people want something in the middle. And it depends on the book.
Yeah.
And it depends on the listener. And I always hope that we make the right choices and go in the right direction.
So we're on a podcast right now.
Yes.
And obviously podcasts have just been booming.
Amazing.
Do you think that the popularity of podcasts will lead to the boost of people listening to audiobooks?
It already has. So in my world, we sort of talk about podcasts as the gateway drug.
Yeah.
Right? Because people get accustomed to longer form listening. They start to want sometimes, I mean, there are people who listen to podcasts and audiobooks. There are people who just listen to audiobooks. There's people who mix it up. But really, it's getting people used to a long-form listening and paying attention to sound and to voice and all that. So I think audiobooks are like, they're growing so fast in the publishing realm, unlike print or ebooks, which has, you know, ebooks have kind of stabilized and print books are still going strong. But with audiobooks, it's growing, like, you know, the numbers are kind of 20% a year in terms of growth of numbers of titles that are released and, you know, people making money and people wanting to buy them and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's going to continue to be a symbiosis. It's an amazing time that we kind of have all the stories in our pockets, whether it's podcasts or audiobooks. Audiobooks appeal across generations, you know, whether people need them because of something changed in their own personal life or health, whether they just really love to have something to do, to listen to while they're commuting or gardening or knitting or all those things. But it's also a younger generation doing perhaps all those things, but other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is cutting across generations in a way that I think has been helped a lot by podcasts. Thank you.
My pleasure. In your opinion, is there a genre of book that comes across better in audio form or on paper?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Because I lean towards audiobooks, I do feel that sometimes memoirs, especially if read by a well-known or somebody whose voice is recognized, that can be so pleasurable if they're a good reader, like Mark Critch and Rick Mercer, and I'm trying to think of other ones, just, you know, people who are, you know, their voices and they're telling their stories and they're funny or they're interesting or entertaining. But then there's, you know, we're also did a book recently, which Nicole Power read, and it was called Our Homesick Songs. And it had some singing in it because there was it was set in Newfoundland of the imagination, and there were two kids and they start singing, and some of them are folk songs and some of them are made, you know, were made up by the author. And that's such a pleasure. Like when you have that texture that gets added to a book because of the voice. And I think it's, you know, it's people just really wanting to have a guide and have a companion on the journey with an audiobook. So I think some books do lend themselves more to, but I think almost any book that's narrative, driven by narrative, can become a strong and striking audiobook for sure.
How does one work in audiobooks? Your background is theater mixed with radio. I assume that some people on your audiobook team at Penguin Random House Canada are coming from the publishing world.
Yeah.
Traditionally, where do people come from?
Well, it's pretty new. So people, to a certain extent, publishing, but our audio engineer comes out of working in audio for a very long time. And working in TV as well as a sound guy on locations. So that's, you know, kind of it's morphed now into audiobooks, which is a very particular kind of sound recording, requiring a lot of patience and very precise listening. And we have somebody on our team who comes from the theater world, who knows actors really well, has been a stage manager and organized schedules, so that's, and been a producer. So that's really good. So I think, you know, and then with the freelance directors that we're working with, a variety, some coming from audio, some coming from theater. It's a new thing in Canada, really. ECW Press and the smaller independent presses have also been doing audiobooks. In fact, they got into the game a little earlier, and they've been doing a lot of audiobooks with Coach House, ECW Press, and others. So that started. There have been a few smaller self-help or genre-specific audiobook publishers in Canada, but it's really just all starting now or about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago maybe. So it's kind of a brand new world. So it's, you know,
that's
I don't
exciting.
Know. It is very exciting, and I'm pretty fortunate to be in on the ground of developing a new program and being part of the, you know, the wave of audiobook love is happening. And to be involved in that, it'll be really interesting to see in the future how it grows and what kind of paths people take toward it. But I would say, you know, attuning yourself to sound, knowing about voice, knowing about performance, all those kinds of things. It's, you know, it's such a pure form. I think maybe only mime would be much purer, really. And we're not going to go there because we want the words. Anyway, but yeah, so it's, I don't think that there are any real traditional paths, really traditional paths, because it's pretty new.
It's so new. It's hard to say. That's exciting, though. Lots of opportunities.
I think so. I think it's going to be an exciting time in the years ahead.
Very cool. Okay, before I let you go, I need to ask if you could suggest three Penguin Random House Canada books for our readers to listen to. Maybe if they haven't listened to any audiobooks before.
Sure. And in keeping with this particular podcast, I wanted to focus on the first two that, that sprang to mind. One is called Women Talking.
I just finished reading it last night.
Okay.
In paper form.
What do you think?
I loved it. I especially loved the end.
Yeah. Don't tell anybody about the end at this point.
I won't. Yeah. But it did take me a while to read it. I didn't find I was turning every page really quickly, but that last little bit,
Yes. So that particular book, written by Miriam Taves, based on some horrific real-life events, but interestingly, although it's called Women Talking, and it's about eight women talking in a barn in South America about events that have happened in their religious Mennonite community, the story is being written down by the only person they trust who's been away, a man who can write, because these women are not able to write. And so we are hearing their stories through his voice. So when it turned into an audiobook, the author was, well, will we hear the women's voices? And it's like, no, because it's not an audio drama. It's not written as that. It's somebody describes somebody speaking.
Yes.
Sometimes they're directly quoted, but sometimes it's just they said such and such. They describe how they speak. It's a narration.
And it's his notes.
Yeah, it's his notes and it's his voice. So, you know, that kind of was a bit tough because it's about women talking. And, you know,
it's the title.
It may actually turn into a stage play at some point or something more. Who knows? Because those women should get be heard. But so we found a way, I think it was Miriam who said, well, why don't we have a choir at least sing one of the hymns, because there are hymns in the book, because these are all religious women and they have beautiful voices and singing has been a big part of their lives. So the book opens with Miriam Taves giving the author's notes. So it opens with a woman's voice and it ends with a choir, Viva Youth Singers of Toronto, actually, but voices from between about, you know, 17 to probably people in their 60s, eight women singing.
That's
so
beautiful.
So that's in addition to what the audiobook can
bring
you.
And now I feel like I'm going to have to listen to
it. Well, you are going to have to listen to that. Absolutely. So that's one. And the voice of the actor is Matthew Edison, and he did a beautiful job. He's very, very listenable and very, you know, it's finding what the feelings are in that story that you as a reader are bringing, that we're opening the door for the listener to hear in a different way. Tanya Tagok. So, Split Tooth, her new amazing fiction, but also memoirish, sort of imagination, speculative, wild ride. So, it's an amazing book. It looks beautiful. There are beautiful drawings in it. But it also is an audiobook read by her, and she has one of the most amazing voices in the world. And so she came into studio. Her voice is such an instrument. She plays with it in such a powerful, sometimes visceral way. So that was amazing to hear her do the poetry pieces, the narrations. And then toward the end of the recording, she just started doing extemporaneous throat singing. So that is cut in to the transitions of all the pieces.
Wow.
So that one is like, just run and get that one.
Yes.
And
yeah, I'm going to listen to that like
so
tonight.
So we have had people say to us, you know, the book is great, but in the audio, it's just transformative.
Yeah.
So that's a great one. So the third, another book by a woman, in keeping with what we're doing here and celebrating women and their stories, is Our Homesick Songs. It's a second novel by Emma Hooper, and it's kind of set in a Newfoundland of the imagination. And I mentioned it before, but there's also singing in it. And the person who read it, Nicole Power, is also a musician and a singer. And there's a ballad that was written just for this book that she sings. She's lyrical voice with an incredibly lyrical poetic story. So I would say those are three great ones to start with, but never stop. Never stop. It's, you know, I think it can be really addictive finding the right voice. Not all voices will work for every single listener, but if you find a voice that you like and you can find more audiobooks read by that actor or kinds of books that you like. So yeah, so all we want to do at Penguin Random House is continue to get great Canadian stories, fiction, nonfiction, YA, maybe picture books at some point, and just get them out to listeners.
Amazing. This question I ask all of my guests because I'm just curious about your life. If you have a day off in Toronto, what are you doing just for yourself?
Well, to put together a couple of my passions, which would be walking and listening, I would probably set out and take the TTC to somewhere near a ravine or somewhere, a neighborhood I haven't explored before, start listening to a story of some sort, take a break for a coffee, and then just keep walking and keep listening. So I like exploring the city a lot. And if you have it with, you can have it with the symphony of the city in the background, but to have a voice in your head accompanying you and telling you a great story, that is my idea of a great day. Beautiful weather is a plus, absolutely. A nicely drizzly day for a story that's a little bit more melancholy. Whatever it takes, it's just putting those two things together makes me a happy woman.
Lovely. And you are never really alone with audiobooks.
No, you don't have to be. You can just, you know, kind of hook into that storytelling need that we all have. You know, we are all about stories. That's how we live our lives. That's how we tell our lives to ourselves. Sometimes we make up stories we shouldn't, but having other people tell us stories and starting to empathize with other people and to have the voice bring us there. Yeah, you don't have to be alone. You can have lots of voices in your head.
Thanks so much for coming in.
It was great to talk with you. Thank you.
This has been Sisters of Sound, produced by Tattoo Sound and Music in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Follow us on our socials. We are at sisters_of_sound on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and tell your friends. Bye.